Alex Edelman walked in here just months ago, a loser, a nobody. Today, he has entered a returning champion, a star of New York stage and screen. He's on all the talk shows. Like, what if that was my new persona?
He walked in, a loser, a nothing, a nobody, a schmuck, a schlemiel, a schlem, just the endless. And today he's still that, but people like his show.
Hey everybody, it's Mike Birbiglia. That is the voice of Alex Edelman. This is such a fun episode today. Because it's the return of Alex Edelman. He was on the show in the fall right before his solo show, Just For Us, was about to debut off Broadway. I'm presenting the show. I think it's fantastic. Since then, it's going into its second sold-out run at the Soho Playhouse, and then starting a new six-week run at the Greenwich House Theater, starting June 13th, tickets at justforusshow.com. We have a great chat. I'm in Chicago this week, by the way. For 4 weeks, I'll be at the Steppenwolf Theater. Last night, I did my first show. It's phenomenal. I mean, it's the best acoustics, the best lighting, the best theater team. I mean, if you're anywhere near Chicago, come check out this show. Then I'm going to Los Angeles for the Netflix Festival for one night. Then I'll be at the Mark Taper Forum in Los Angeles for the month of August, doing the show in its full glory with lights and sound and design, and I'm so excited. There's a few tickets left for my shows. I'm doing three in London at the Leicester Square Theater. I'm doing one night in Paris. We'll see if anyone shows up to see me in Paris. Same goes for Iceland. I'm just going because I really want to go to these places and see if anyone will show up and see me do my old man in the pool show. I'll also be at the Bay Street Theater in Sag Harbor, New York, this summer in the Hamptons for 1 week in July. All of that's on birbigs.com. Join the mailing list. What can I say about Alex Edelman? I think he's a fascinating storyteller, hilarious person. He was recently on Colbert and Seth Meyers, and he's just running the table of really doing it up in New York City. He just got nominated for an Outer Circle Critics Award for his solo show, Just For Us. Enjoy my conversation with the great Alex Edelman. It's very rare that on this show I'm able to speak to someone who has had a meteoric rise, and I speak to them right before it and right in the middle of it. It's very rare. On this show or anything, really.
I always joke with you about this, but I've said, you know, I have been saying it to you since we started working together, that like the word dayenu, which in Hebrew means it would have been enough. And like it's part of Passover, the holiday that we're currently in as we record this, and so like there are a million different little things where like, well, if just I got to do a solo show in New York produced by Mike Birbiglia, it would have been enough. If just, you know, Steve Martin came and Jerry Seinfeld came, it would have been, you know, like those things are, so like these things are constantly little things, but also I still have to go to work. Like I still have a show to do every day, and also the show to some extent. There is a little trade-off, like to every, there's a Faustian aspect to everything where like, I have to, like, if the show was totally obscure, then I would, then like, I'd actually have a little bit more freedom to tinker with, you know, to tinker with it creatively, but like, I'm still making those, tinker. The point is I still have to do the work, but it is also my wildest dreams come true and I can't believe it. And like every day I wake up thinking like, oh my God, how lucky am I that I get to do it. But
this is a funny thing about the catch-22 of sort of Broadway off Broadway is like, you do have to like keep your body in like good condition to talk for 90 minutes a night to people.
Tomorrow I have my second visit with a speech pathologist and I had COVID and I had a check to make sure the problem after COVID was in my lungs instead of my throat and the problem might indeed be my, so like, and I do vocal exercises right before I go on stage. I do them twice a day. Like, and I would have laughed at like, you know, and I've stopped eating like dairy before the show. Like it's this kind of stuff that I would never have thought about. And like, it is really, you're right. Like someone's like, you're like an athlete. I'm like, let's keep it in perspective.
There's a thing that I've been working on for my show, Old Man in the Pool. And I find myself, which is essentially the 25 word pitch. It's always over 25 words, but there's a thing I read once, which is like that Steven Spielberg says that like any great movie or show or whatever it is, you could do a 25 word pitch or else it's sort of not a movie.
Yeah.
And so what I would say is like, what's your 25 words on Just For Us? And you can go over because nothing's 25 words.
It's a, boy, weirdly, no one's ever asked me this. I mean, like it's an examination of my own Judaism when that Judaism is removed as far as possible from its natural habitat and placed in a different environment. And that different environment is a meeting of white nationalists. So
pretty good.
Yeah. So I went to a meeting of white nationalists in Long Island City, or in like Queens. And then eventually one of them was like, sorry, this guy's a Jew. And I'm like, yeah, I'm a Jew. And like, that's basically the
that's the short version.
Yeah, that's the short version of the show. But also, by the way, the 25 word pitch for so many, like, you know, like, like the 25-word pitch of The Godfather is what? Like a man is given an offer he can't refuse. Right. You know, like there is a different.
And also Steven Spielberg, by the way. I mean, some of those are 3-word pitches. Like, whoa, sharks.
Yeah. I also like the idea of like trying to reduce everything. Like Castaway, a man takes a trip. You know,
bad flight. But let me counter and go, what's your pitch of my show? Maybe that's better than what I have.
A man takes a swim. No.
Sharks.
Yeah, sharks. Whoa, sharks.
Whoa, sharks.
A man takes a trip. But you know, the thing, but it is interesting because if you said to me, what is Mike's show about? Mike's show is about the battle that we all go through, which is, especially as we get older, which is the battle with our own health.
That's interesting. I never thought of it that way. So I find it helpful to do the 25-word pitch. A lot of creatives listen to the show, so I always sort of hang a lantern on anything that's a creative process. But it's like, I find it helpful to do the 25-word pitch at different stages of the process.
Sure.
Because like you were saying earlier, sometimes certain things are different a year into the process than they are 3 years into the process. And sometimes you do your 25-word, and then you go like, I don't know if this show is, I think it's veering too far away from the 25 word.
Yeah. Or in the back of your mind, I've had this 4 or 5 times over the course of this process. It's always extremely humiliating every time internally, is where someone gives you a note and in the back of your mind, you go, that piece doesn't work because the piece never really belonged in the show.
I just witnessed something. Sorry to interrupt. You just stuttered out of the side of your mouth.
Yeah. Sorry.
You tried to do a side of your mouth talk, and then you stuttered while doing it, which I've almost never witnessed.
Yeah. It's a real... when I talk out the side of my mouth, I have a real speech impediment. You know what's weird? I can only talk out of the side of my mouth out of this side of my mouth because I have a fake tooth on this side.
Oh.
So I can't go the other way. And once I was trying to do it, in a social setting, and my cousin Jason went, "What's happening right now?"
Oh my god!
All I'm saying is this has happened to me 4 or 5 times over the course of the process of doing this show, and actually pretty much every other show, which is that you have a thing that gets big laughs or that you really like or something, and you really want it in the show, but it never belonged to the main thing.
Yeah.
And you try to tie it together with some tenuous scaffolding, but it never really belonged in the show. So at some point, it's slated for execution, and as the, you know, and it keeps getting reprieves from the comedy Supreme Court in your head.
Yeah.
But, like, eventually, it just gets noted by the right person or at the right time you come to grips with it, and it winds up getting cut. And so, like, having your 25 words, what the show is about, can also be if you have the courage, and I haven't. Most of the time, I haven't had the courage. But like, if you have the courage to actually make the cut that you know is necessary, that's a, you know, your 25 words will help you be like, what's your show about? And then, you know, say your 25 words and then go, okay, great. Does each piece of my show, is it relevant to the 25 words?
Yeah.
That I, and if you think it isn't, then cut your piece. And if you can't cut your piece, then maybe readjust your 25 words.
This is a new slow round question. Can you think of a time where you were so scared you ran away physically?
Oh, yes. From several dates.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah, I would cut it short and be like, I'm sorry, I have to go. Or there was a girl.
And then you like, jog.
I would literally like go, can I? I was on a date with this woman and I didn't like, and it felt like she thought she was maybe like entitled to me.
Okay.
And I was like, I have this little suspicion. And also she was older and I was like 21 and it just was like, I, some point I look over and I see her texting and I'm not a reader of other people's texts mm-hmm. generally, but she went, hey, just about to fuck this twink.
Wait. No,
I'm so sorry. Slow this down. It's so gross to say.
Let's slow this down.
Out loud.
Take it easy. Take a deep breath. We're going to tell different stories today on the show.
I am so sorry.
I'm not going to tell this story. You've been begging me to tell this story on the show.
No, please.
Since we started the podcast two years ago.
Don't do this, Mike. Please don't do this.
And I said, like Alex, please don't tell this story. And you keep insisting again and again and again. I just don't get it.
I'm so sorry. It's so graphic. It's stuck with me.
Just kidding. This is great. It's a great story.
13 years ago, and I never forget where we are. I remember the brightness on her screen. I remember like exactly how bright the screen was.
You're telling me you saw that on her screen, and she didn't mean for you to see that?
No.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry, it's so graphic. I'm so sorry. And I'm sorry to people listening and watching if Peter
unsubscribe and like the, for sure.
I'm really sorry.
Unsubscribe.
You asked me a time I was so scared and
if
like
you're in the comments on Apple Podcasts, just write 5 stars and then write I definitely give the show 5 stars with the exception of that one Alex Edelman story where he's called a twink and then he reads a text message by accident.
Yes. It was so graphic and I just thought, I'm not doing this.
Oh,
but also there have been moments like I have
and
courted,
then you ran away.
I literally,
the end of the story is you run away?
I said, I have to use the bathroom, and then I left.
Oh my gosh, really? Where were you, cafe or something? Restaurant?
I was at this restaurant in London called the Groucho Club.
This is a new slow round question. Really good nickname you've gotten in your life, really bad nickname you've gotten in your life.
Oh my God. Yarmulke Boy.
Oh gosh.
Really bad nickname.
How dare they?
Yeah. I really hate it.
It's amazing how like with nicknames,
it's a bad
like
one.
The simplest wins somehow.
Yeah.
Like, that's so simple. Because you wore a yarmulke and they're like, Yarmulke Boy.
Which was shortened even more insultingly to YB.
Oh, God.
And there's this guy. YB for Yarmulke Boy. And it's so. And the funny thing is, there's a guy, the guy who gave me that nickname doesn't understand why he's not more in my life.
Oh, my God. That's so funny.
He's
I
like,
love that.
He'll be like,
I love that.
He'll send me a text and be like, YB, why aren't you answering my phone calls?
Oh my God.
And I'm like, the answer is in the question.
The answer is in
like,
the question.
Like, leave me alone.
By the way, literally, that's the joke.
Yeah.
You got to do that on stage. The answer is in the question. I think that's the punchline. I mean, like, everything, the setup is the nickname, the punchline is he's more in my life, the tag is like the answer's in the question. I think that's done.
It really
That's
is
done.
Okay. Anyway, Yarmulke Boy was my Yarmulke Boy.
And by the way, I want to open this up because this is the first time we've debuted the slow round question of nickname.
Yeah.
And I want to point out that when we talk about this, we're not endorsing the nickname.
No.
I'm not endorsing YM.
YB.
YB.
Yarmulke Man. I would love that upgrade. Are you kidding? I would have killed. Yarmulke Man's almost a Jewish superhero. Yarmulke Boy is a shitty sidekick.
We're working it out. We're talking it through. Don't be cruel to people. Don't be mean to people. Don't give them mean nicknames. By the way, this is a good rule of thumb. Don't call people things they don't want to be called.
No, absolutely
just
not.
Whenever people talk about the she, her, the, you know, the pronouns, all this stuff, it's like,
just call people what they want to be called.
It doesn't matter. Stop it.
This is not something I've ever admitted before. For my middle school yearbook, they went, what nicknames do you have? And I put down like 20 nicknames, none of which I had, but all the ones that I thought were cool. And I can't remember any specific ones. But my dad looked at the page and he went, no one calls you any of these. And I was like, but it'd be great if they did.
Yeah. What's your favorite joke?
Oh my God.
This is new to the slow round.
I love jokes.
jokes that people don't know are jokes that don't belong to neither Alex nor I nor anyone in the world.
No. I found one in
their public domain.
Would you let me submit two?
Please.
They're both Jewish jokes.
Okay.
One is this guy dies and he goes to heaven. First of all, my favorite jokes are ones that can be expanded and you can put things in and make it like a little story.
Like the Aristocrats.
Like the Aristocrats, or like Norm Macdonald used to do with the moth joke.
Yep.
And this guy died. And for expediency's sake, I'm not going to do it. But this guy dies and he goes to heaven and he meets God. And when I tell the joke, he meets God. They're waiting in line for frozen yogurt. There's a hold up at the front. But, you know, like, he meets God. And he's like, oh, God. God's like, hi, Mark. And he's like, oh, I'm such a fan. Like, thanks for everything. And, you know, peacocks are amazing and all this stuff. And God's like, it's nice to meet a fan. And they're there. And the dynamic has been acknowledged. So it's a little awkward, actually. And then the guy says, God? And God's like, yeah, man. And he says, do you want to hear a joke? And God's like, oh, sure, I love jokes. And the guy tells God a Holocaust joke. And God goes, you know, I have to tell you, I don't find that joke funny at all. And God goes, and the guy says, wow, I guess you needed to be there, huh?
Oh, gosh.
Isn't that...
Oh my gosh.
Isn't that like the best joke? It's a novel. I guess you needed to be there, huh?
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good.
But it's not funny.
It's written by Eli Wiesel in 19. That's a good joke. Can you tell the one you told me one recently that I really liked?
For kids. Oh, I love, so a joke for chill, like it's you go, what's a pirate's favorite letter of the alphabet? And then the kid will say, R. And you go, you'd think it'd be R, but 'tis the C that he loves.
Oh my God.
Isn't that a great, great joke?
It's perfect joke.
It's for any joke that works for a kid.
Joke jokes are good. People groan at joke jokes. And I submit to you, groaners, that you're not enjoying your life enough.
Yeah.
That joke is funny. I'm sorry.
It's a great joke. And the other one that I love is this: these two Jews are walking by a church, and there's a sign outside that says,
I prefer if you don't use the word Jews, but
okay,
we'll
fine.
Look at that.
These two kikes are walking by a church. And sorry. These two Jews are walking by a church, and there's a sign outside that says, convert to Christianity, $400. And the guy's like, I'll convert to Christianity, $400. One of them says to the other, he's like, I'm going to go in there. I'm going to do it. And his friend's like, you're not going to convert to Christianity. And he's like, oh, no, I'm going to do it. I'm like, why not? And he goes in, and he's in there for 3 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours. And he comes out finally, and he's wearing a new suit with a bolo tie, and he's eating a ham and cheese sandwich. And his friend goes, did you at least get the money? And the guy goes, huh, you people, is that all you think about? Money?
That's funny.
It's really funny. Yeah, I love that one. Sorry.
I'm not going to go on record with laughing about a stereotype, but...
No, it's not. It's about Jews. It's about Jews being like so quick to shed their Judaism. It's about Jews who desperately don't want to be Jewish. The desire to assimilate.
How much
quickly.
More do you want to put on the cutting room floor?
What?
How much more of this do you want to put on the cutting room floor?
Sorry.
My question for you is, and I'm only comfortable asking you this since we're friends. It's like, what's the worst you've ever felt when someone, not online, said something anti-Semitic, but like in person?
I dated this girl. I tried to put it on the show, and if I'm being honest, it just didn't fit and it wasn't fun. I dated this girl. She lived on the Upper East Side, and I moved there after college, and we dated, and she worked in a very fancy clothing store on Madison Avenue, folding clothes. And I met her at a bar, and I really liked her. And I thought that she was Jewish for some lazy reason. And she really was not. Like, and she was not just like not Jewish. She was WASPy, and like she had a name that was very distinctively not Jewish.
Okay.
But for some reason, we're at dinner with two other people or at a bar. And I mentioned, I was like, well, you had Pesach growing up, or you had Passover? And she went, I'm not Jewish. And she's like, I don't know how many times I have to tell you this. I'm not Jewish. And I said, okay. And then we're walking, and it's and we're outside on the street, and it must have been around Christmas because there was one, there was a whole street full of like Christmas lights on the Upper East Side, one of the blocks between like 2nd and 1st Avenue. And she said, you know, I'm not Jewish. And I said, yeah, I'm sorry. And she went, after a pause, she went, you know what, actually, I really hate that you're Jewish.
Oh, gosh.
And I said, what? And she went, it's your whole life. She went, it's your whole life, and all the things that you struggle with would be different if you weren't Jewish. Like, that, I'm paraphrasing, but she was like, and then, like, it was, I kept dating her. I kept dating her for, like, a couple, we went on a couple more dates. And, like, eventually she did something that, like, was clearly, like, the end of the relationship. And I tried to actually put it in the show, but it wasn't, it didn't belong. And I didn't feel like reliving it every night. But that was not fun when someone was like, she actually was like, it bothers me that you're, because it validated all of my fears about, like, being Jewish meant that, like, there were certain things that were closed to me. Because I was like, well, I'm too, not that anyone would be like, you're Jewish, you can't be here. But just that, like, there were certain social graces or attitudes or personality traits that I wear on my sleeve that meant that certain people from a different, you know, like, part of society I would just never be able to learn or have, like, I wouldn't have the decorous, like, I wouldn't have the decorum to be, part of whatever. But, like, you know, I would classify it. My therapist recently was like, that's anti-Semitism. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I guess it's textbook anti-Semitism, but that really hurt my feelings. And that was really sad. And also I liked her. So, sorry, that's very long, you know?
What's strange about it is that ultimately what ended the relationship was when you saw her text that says, I'm about to fuck this twink. You'd think that anti-Semitism would make you leave, but then you stayed until that weird twink text.
Yeah, I was reading her phone, and she was just like, about to fuck this yarmulke twink.
Yarmulke boy twink?
Yarmulke boy twink.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, it's so YB. Earnest. It's so earnest.
YBT. Oh, okay. This I thought was so fun at the Comedy Cellar the other night. It was like a classic example of a working it out in real life. You know, I try to explain this show to people who've never heard it before. Mm-hmm. And I go, we work out jokes, me and comedians, other comedians work out jokes, other creatives. And it's kind of hard to describe, but it actually exists in real life. So here's an example of a joke that I had. And I told it to you, and you tagged it.
Yeah.
And then my friends, I told that version to my friend Zarina Garg, and she tagged it. And then I told that version to Ryan Hamilton, who's a funny comic also.
Sure, sure.
All these people, very funny comics. And then he tagged it. And it's this. The other day, my daughter Una, who's 7, goes, Dad, your teeth are yellow. And I go, well, I'm doing the best I can. And she pulled out a cat puppet, and the cat said, those are the yellowest teeth I've ever seen. And now I'm getting it from all sides. And I started thinking, like, I want my daughter to be funny, but I don't want her to be an insult comic or a ventriloquist. And then I started thinking, how long has she been thinking that? And then Ryan Hamilton goes, long enough to write a one-act play about it. But up until now, she didn't have the puppet.
Yeah.
So your tag was ventriloquist, which is great. Zarna's tag was, how long has she been thinking about this? And Ryan's tag was, didn't have the puppet.
Yeah.
One act play, didn't have the puppet. But it's a great example of, like, I truly, truly, truly believe that comedy is this way, and I think most art forms can be this way based on visual artists who I'm friends with and theater artists I'm friends with, film. Like I said, David Chase sort of takes notes and ideas mm-hmm. from everyone on the set, is like, all of this stuff that we're doing is it's you and your friends.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know what I mean? And it's just a matter of whether or not you give credit to them.
Oh, I always, I always try to give props because also, like, I don't, you know, I want to constantly be like, this person helped with this, this person. Also, I didn't know the story that I was telling was going to be a show until a bunch of people were like, that's comedy.
Yes.
Danny Jolas, Morgan Evans, Chloe Evshin, a whole bunch of different people were like, that's a show, that's a show, that's a show. But by the way, that joke, I have a thought about that joke.
Please. Yeah, it's not done. It's not done.
First of all, ventriloquism is so degraded as an art form that you could say like she gets the yellowest teeth I've ever seen. Yeah. You go, oh no, I'm raising a ventriloquist.
Oh, that's true too.
Like that would, it's a shot at ventriloquism, but like it's still a very, it's
then
like.
Then you'd lose the insult comic part, which I like the insult go, comic part because it's a 1-2 punch.
Yeah, no, of course, of course.
And it you builds to ventriloquism, I think, in its current state, which I like.
I think 1,000%. I'm just like, I'm saying that insult comedian is less degraded than ventriloquism. So if you said ventriloquism, you could get the pop of a punchline on ventriloquism and then go, or an insult comic. And then like, and then go off. But I think you're right. I think the way it is now is better.
Yeah, I always try to go, if I think about that joke structurally, it goes, I want my daughter to be funny is the setup.
Yes.
I don't want her to be an insult comic is the punchline. And then, or a ventriloquist is the tag topper, that actually is secretly the biggest punchline.
Sure, but you're right. And
like
also the
building to it.
And then I was thinking you have a second thing after that.
Right, and then how long she's been thinking it, I would describe that as like a flourish or like a digression on it.
But wasn't there a second insult as well?
Oh, yeah, there was another insult, which was, oh my God.
Sorry, to be like, also, isn't there another humiliating instance?
No, it was, she goes, Dad, you should wear a hat. I can see the skin on your head, on top of your head.
And then what I think would be funny is if you're like, and then I really missed the cat puppet.
Oh, that's nice.
Because that really took the edge off.
Yeah.
The news is, the insult is softer when it comes from a puppet.
Oh, that's a great one. I love that. Yeah, I just wonder if it, yeah, I'll see how it goes.
Of course.
People can't see this, it's an audio, but it's like I always think of jokes in terms of like, it's like an arc. So it's like you're going up sort of the arc of it, and then if you peak at a certain point, you're like, all right, I'm on to the next topic.
Yeah, of course.
That sort of buys me the interest in the next topic. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's almost like you're piquing their interest with how funny it can be. And then they're like, okay, well, I'm on for the next one.
Yeah.
And then I feel like if you do the thing about skin on top of your head, it might be 80% of what the joke before it was. And if it is, I just cut it.
Sure. And I, by the way, I have
but
a bad-
But it's funny.
But I have a bad comedy habit sometimes where I will say the idea and then it leads to an act out.
Yeah.
And the audience is like, no, we laughed at the idea.
Right.
And the act out is illustrating the idea that we already know.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So you don't have to.
I had like a huge discovery about that in DC this weekend. I was doing the Old Man in the Pool and there's a piece of text where I talk about this old man in the locker room when I was a kid. And I call back to it later in the show. And there's this moment where just my sitting on the stool and the posture I have.
Yeah.
The audience didn't need me to say, it's the old man from earlier.
Yeah.
And when I realized that, I was like, oh my God, great.
Yeah.
Less words.
And also you can evoke something of the physical reaction. It's a masterclass touch and audiences love to be let in on a
masterclass. And it's also just lucky. Sometimes you get lucky and you go like, oh, okay.
Can I proffer a joke?
Please. Can I proffer a joke?
Would you submit to a joke?
How dare you make this such an erudite podcast?
Can I proffer a joke? Let's see. I'm desperate to... I want to do this thing. Like, there's a thing that you do about healthy food and unhealthy food. And I had something that was such a similar area for years about salads, about the expensiveness of salads.
Oh, yeah.
And about how, like, my girlfriend's like, you need it. My girlfriend is always now like, what's the color of your pee? And I'm just like, what? And she's like, what's the color of your pee? Your pee needs to be clear.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well,
oh my gosh,
the opacity. And like also just, well, it's, you know what sucks? I'll never be able to do any parenting material because you ate the whole cake on parenting.
No, I didn't.
You ate some really, maybe I'll feel different, but also like watching my health now is a huge part of my life. And I'm like, well, Berbigli is eating that cake too. But like, I won't even try with this one. But I had a thing about the cheapest way to get a salad now is to go into a McDonald's, buy 10 hamburgers off the dollar menu, throw away the buns, throw away the hamburgers, throw in all the lettuce and the tomato, mix it in with some honey dressing, and voila, $10 salad.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're basically working with a dollar menu.
Yeah. Like the idea
you're
is
maximizing
like,
the dollar menu.
And Gary Gulman has a joke about avocados are so expensive, they sell them by the each.
Sell them by the each.
That's the problem when you love comedy so much that almost every topic in your life someone has a great joke about. So you always have to find, like, even the thing that I was telling you the other day about, like, I was in Chicago and my phone had died. And I needed directions in the pouring rain. But then I'm just this man in the pouring rain going up to people being like, can you give me directions?
Oh, my God, yeah.
And it's a little like the John Mulaney joke.
The Mulaney bit in the subway, yeah.
But it really is like, fuck, do I have any jokes that aren't?
He's like, now I'm chasing this woman. Yeah, something like that.
Being like, I'm not going to rave you. I'm a little boy.
I'm a little boy. Yeah, I'm a boy.
Is the thing where it's, ugh. It's so hard to...
I always have that. Like, I had that the other day where someone said to me, like, I have a WebMD joke in my show. And they go... And mine is totally true. I go, when I had all these conditions, like, I went on WebMD, which I don't recommend. I go, and if you do go on, don't read all of it. Because I think it's infinite. I think the more you scroll, the more they type.
That's one of my favorite, and it's new. It's new in the show.
It's new, and someone pointed out, they're like, well, there's a lot of, like, memes about WebMD. And so I was like, oh, okay. And then I look up what the memes are. And I'm like, it's a different joke. I mean, their joke is basically, like, whatever you type in WebMD, it means you have brain cancer. Or some cancer, whatever. And what my joke is that, essentially, no matter how much you scroll, they will type more. And I think they're different jokes, but, you know, I'll let people decide in the comments section.
Okay, here's a joke that I'm actually offering. There's now when you buy a meal on Uber Eats, there is an option to pay off the meal in installments. Like there's a little like separate app that it will. And I'm like, if I am in a place in my life where I am. Where someone could foreclose on the burrito that I had a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Like, if I can't pay cash for my meal, it's irresponsible to let me not pay cash.
Yeah.
But am I punching down there, too?
Well, like, it's a close call. Know. I mean, I immediately had tags, too, which is like, if I have to do an arm loan for a grilled cheese, maybe this isn't the right plan. But
I can't eat.
Is arm loan a thing? I think it is.
I'm still paying off brunch on Tuesday from Tuesday 2020 or something like from like Tuesday December 25th 2020.
It did cross my mind that the economics of your joke are they cross my mind for sure.
Yeah,
and you know what's funny is like. I always think about with jokes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like I'm not offended by that joke, but I always think about like how many people relate to the joke.
Yeah.
Like not that you ask to be 100%, but like what's the human part of the joke that people relate to?
I have this joke about millennials buying houses and it's had a reach beyond.
Oh, it's huge.
It's more people know me for that joke than anything else.
Yeah, you have this.
Quietly.
Can you say the joke?
It's about this, the joke is about how the full joke is I went to check an ATM and I had a couple $1,000 and I thought to myself, I should buy a house. That's how little I know about being an adult. I should buy a house. And I said, how is any millennial? And that part's always cut off in the TikTok or Comedy Central version. But the minute does well on the social media sites is like, how is any millennial ever going to buy a home? How is any young person ever going to own a home? It's made me hate old people. I see a few of you in here tonight, I hate you. Because every old person in a city like New York or LA or London or Chicago or Boston is the same. Because everyone's like, my house is worth $3 million. But when I bought it in 1981, I paid 11 raspberries for it.
By the way, I love that joke. I was furious that Comedy Central put that on their TikTok for their millions and millions of people. They didn't tag you. And so what I'm going to do to make it right is I'm going to put it on my TikTok
and tag you. Please. But it's done well for a variety of these like stand-up, like there's something that's reposted. It's got like 10 million views on Instagram
right
now and something
that
keeps going.
Because it's so but it's different. It's actually coming from a different perspective.
Completely.
It's economically the opposite, which is like, it's just like, you're talking about something that like essentially no one can afford of that age.
Yes.
Like, and no one can afford to buy an apartment or a house.
Yeah. Or maybe the angle is that's how bad things are economically.
Yeah, yeah.
Where they're just like, we just have to make sure people aren't taking advantage of like predatory burrito lending.
Right, right.
That's the more responsible version of the joke.
Can I do another Una joke?
Oh, please, of course.
I'm trying to get these Una jokes in. I'm trying to lace some of these jokes about Una during the show because I think they're funny. Like, we were at Christmas at my family's house, and Una's cousins come up, and I go, Una, tell your cousins about how you go to school. And Una goes, I take mama and dada to school, and then I go to work. And it was her first, like, tangible joke, and
oh, that's
it killed.
So funny.
And then I go, some jokes are for you, the audience, some are for Una, and some are by Una. Which
that's
is a callback
great.
To something earlier in the show where I go, some jokes are for you and some jokes are for Una.
You are always very good, though, about giving credit to other people in your life for the jokes.
Give Una
that they,
credit for the joke?
It's almost insane amount of footnoting in Mike Birbiglia shows.
That's
being like, Joe Birbiglia said this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? But I also think it makes your fans really warm to your, like, you know. They're like, we know his family.
And also, like, you get the implicit credit from just being the person standing there on stage where, like, the audience is like, I think he's involved.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, there is an inherent smugness to mid-2000s comedy where it was like, and then I said the perfect thing that you would never say.
Oh, right.
And I think audiences are a little like, my first solo show was a lot of like me being correct
in
interactions.
I had a couple of those early on, yeah.
And so I had a joke it was a line in real life I actually said, and it was getting a pretty good response. And then I gave it the line to somebody else.
Yeah.
And it got an even better response because there's a little smugness to like, I said this thing that was clever in the moment.
Sure.
And so I gave it to someone else to say that was clever.
Yeah.
And then the audience was like, yeah, he's recounting the thing instead of being like the smarmy, you know.
What was the line?
I was at a book signing at McNally Jackson. And this person was, and I said, and on the shelf, you know how like books are like, da, 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 and then there's one book facing out to highlight the book. One of the books facing out was Mein Kampf.
Uh-huh.
And I preface the joke by going, one of my least favorite things is when people find a little joke and they treat it as really bad, as like really naughty.
Yeah.
And the person signing the book went, I should sign that copy of Mein Kampf. And everyone's like, hysterical.
Yeah, yeah.
And everyone's treating it like the most transgressive thing in the world. And even the bookstore lady's like, if you sign the book, like, I won't tell anyone. Like, I'll just treat it as damaged. Like, be hilarious. Sign a copy of Mein Kampf. It's so funny. And like, everyone's dying over this bullshit joke. And someone pulls the book off the shelf and she signs it XO, Love from the Bunker, Adolf. And everyone's like dying. And I'm looking around for someone to hate this with.
Yeah.
And I find him. And as soon as I see him, I realize we're part of the same family of like people. And I preface the joke by going, if you've ever told a joke and everyone's like, we don't know where the line is, but it's back there. You and I are part of the same group of people walking the earth. I see the guy and I go, he's part of the group. And he goes, I should buy the copy of Mein Kampf. And everyone's like, why would you buy the copy of Mein Kampf, Todd? And he goes, because the pages of my copy are all like stuck together. And everyone's like,
oh,
we
God.
Don't know where the line is,
oh, God.
But it's back there. And like that gets it's more relatable to be like, I love someone who tells a joke that's really horrific
right.
in the moment than being like, and then I told this joke that was really horrific in the moment.
In real life, did you tell it?
In real life, I said
you
that.
You said that.
I actually said
that's
that.
That's a completely absurd thing to say.
I was so off put.
Is
also,
it like a masturbating on Mein Kampf joke? That you
yes,
told in real
never,
life at a bookstore?
Because it was everyone.
Who are
was,
you?
Everyone was.
What is this?
Please come.
This interview is over.
I was just, you know, it was just
this
that everyone
truly inappropriate.
This guy fucking sucks. This guy's an asshole. Boy, if you've taken anything away from this, Mike Birbiglia has given a platform to a monster.
Yeah, yeah. I've let you go too far.
But you know, I will say that knowing you has made me like say worse things about myself that are unpleasant from my past and realize that it's okay.
Oh.
Like you said to me once, like nice. People aren't there to watch you dodge like the like emotional honesty.
Oh.
Remember right. You said that to me?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I always think about that with my own shows. But yeah, I was relaying it to you too.
But so like, by the way, there are good parts about me. But if I was up there and I was like, then I did this thing that was nice, you'd be like, well, that comedian's lost an edge a little bit. But you know,
right,
like,
right.
But I said that it was also one of the few instances where I said in the moment, also my personality until I was 27 was my currency is to say the thing.
Right, right.
Not a great personality type. But
so my hack for that, by the way, and people will notice this if they watch my shows, is I always say I thought.
Yes.
Like it's a witty thing, but it's like I thought this, as opposed to I said, because the I said is sort of like, did you?
Yes.
Did you say that?
I used to say things.
Yeah.
I used to really say things because I was also like, what will happen when I say the thing? Oh man. By the way, Mike, here's my issue with I thought.
Okay.
Until I was 27, I never had a thought I didn't say.
Oh, that's interesting. Wow.
I just said everything that came into my mind. There was no filter. I just said whatever I was thinking.
That's worth mentioning on stage.
In the moment.
So I have a thing in my show about how I hired a lawyer to write my will. We'll call him Will.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to add this potentially to it, which is, it's just true story. I don't have much of a punchline
for it.
This
is maybe my favorite joke in the show, by the way.
But I go, the longer version, which I won't say today, but I go, at the end of our meeting, me and Jen have a meeting with him, and he goes, it's totally true. It's like, I don't have a joke. He says, if I die, the contract of your will gets executed by my company. And I thought, well, that never occurred to me, that the man writing my will is probably going to die before we die. What's the point of everything? What's the point of anything? I thought he was going to live forever. Who writes Will's will? Who writes Will's will when Will doesn't have the will to continue? It's like a John Lennon haiku.
I've lost the will. The executor.
So goofy.
It's really funny.
It's goofy. It doesn't have hard laughs yet, though. It's like, I think it's an interesting, like, pondering thing, because I really did have this thing. I mean, this guy's going, like, and then if I, you know, when I die, the company is just like, what the?
Do you think you're
I somehow thought this guy was immortal, because he writes wills.
But yeah, of course. The Grim Reaper doesn't like, ugh, I've got to clock out. He's part of the infrastructure of life and death.
Yeah,
he can't
part
be
of the
subject.
Infrastructure of death.
It's exactly. You woman at the DMV can't ever wait online. She's the line lady.
Right.
So for the guy with the wills to actually be subject to the laws of life and death, like, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
If you work at the cronut store, you should never wonder what cronuts taste like. You have to. Oh, man.
And then I have this, which is I get the phone call from my doctor about diabetes in the show I talk about. And I go, I don't know if this is funny, but I go, I look at my phone. I see it's the doctor. I picked it up on the first ring. Doctors were a one ring for me. I go, dentists, voicemail.
That's a great joke.
I'm less likely to pick up a call from my dentist than I am to answer the phone when the phone literally says the word spam.
So, also, what are you going to say? Still flossing.
That's funny. It's like spam. Yeah. And then that's all I got. That's all I got today. Those are all my jokes.
Let me do one more. My girlfriend and I now send photos of houses we would like to one day live in.
Oh, that's nice.
But there's Zillow listings that we can never afford. She'll be like, look at this house, it's perfect. And I'm like, it's $10 million.
Oh my gosh.
And she was like, but it would be nice one day. Like, that's the way that like young boys probably send photos of like models to each other, be like, one day.
Oh, I like that.
One day I'll marry her. And like, one day I'll like, but like, it's maybe it's, like when I was a kid, I remember looking at a photo of like, you know, a specific actress and be like, one day I'll marry her. And now it's like, one day I'll marry her and live in here.
That's funny. I think like, I think maybe a, this is maybe like just a totally different take, but it's sure. like, it's like my girlfriend and I, you know, we don't send, like I don't send my girl, maybe it's like, maybe a version of it is like, I don't send my girlfriend dick pics, but I send her Zillow listings
yeah.
where the floor plan is phallic.
That's funny. It's really
maybe,
funny.
I don't know.
That's really, that's good.
I'll try and end on like one thing that I think might make both of us laugh.
Sure.
My wife is very wise, mm-hmm. very wise person, but it means that when she's not wise, it's hard to navigate because she just assumes it's all wise, right? And so the other day she was having like a really bad day. She jammed her finger in the door and we were at urgent care and we're dealing with mildew in our apartment. And just when things couldn't get any worse, a dog pooped in front of the front door of our apartment building. And here's the part I couldn't navigate. She said, someone must have done that on purpose. And I was silent for a little while. And then I said, I don't think that's likely. And then she said, it feels that way. And I closed my eyes and I thought, I hope this conversation ends soon.
Oh my God. Oh my God, you're right. I thought is better than I said. You're right.
Yeah, because I didn't say it.
Because when you think it, there are no consequences.
But I'm trying to capture a thing about being with a partner. Like yes. literally, Jen is so wise and so right so much of the time.
Yes.
That when her percentage is like when you get in that 3% of wrong or 3% of incorrect, mm-hmm. it's like there's nothing I can say. You're sinking threes all day, and it's an air ball, and I'm supposed to pretend it's a three.
Yeah. Well, also the air balls are so rare that you're like, oh my God, thank God, an air ball. Once in a while, it'd be nice to remember. It's like occasionally my girlfriend messes up and she'll be like, I'm so sorry. And I'll say, no problem. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, thank God occasionally you do this.
Yeah.
Thank God, like she'll forget. She forgot that the month of October existed, my girlfriend.
Oh my God.
She was like, oh my God, she's like, oh my God, it's only 2 months before we start shooting. And I was like, it's because she's on a television show. And she was like, oh my God, it's August. We only have like two months before we start. She's like September and then November, we're right into shooting. And I was like, and she went, what? And I went, October. And she went, when? Oh, yeah. And I went, you forgot about October? Also, she showed up 30, and she does it occasionally. She'll forget October exists. So, like, we went to something, and they're like, and we knock on the door, and they open, this couple opens the door, and she's like, and they're like, what are you doing here? And she's like, we have dinner. And they were like, exactly a month from now. It's October 19th, not September 19th. And it's September 19th right now, and you're here. And I was like, enjoying it so much because like I get to mess up like 10 times now because occasionally she'll remind me of something. I'll be like, remember when you thought there were 11 months in the year?
The difference between you and me is that you said it and I thought,
yeah.
I hope this conversation ends soon. We wrap up by I donate to a nonprofit that you really like.
That's
and
right.
think is doing a good job.
There's this incredible Jewish orphanage called Tikva in Odessa, and they have been, you know, they've been around for a pretty long time, and they've donated, and they've been getting orphans, not just Jewish orphans, they've been getting orphans out of Odessa,
wow.
In the southern Ukraine for a while, and their work is the work seems really important to me, and different people have been. Very nice about sending me the receipts that they've been doing in terms of donating to Tikva. And so I would love to be consistent for once in my life. And I'd love to donate
awesome.
Whatever to Tikva Odessa.
Awesome. Well, we will link to them in the show notes. I will donate and I will encourage the folks listening to donate. And thanks for coming on, returning champion.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're gonna be at Greenwich House Theater this summer, starting in June. People can see it for 6 weeks. And tickets are going super duper fast.
They are, thank God.
So, which is so exciting. And if you think, if you're not sure, about whether you should go, just ask Steve Martin or Jerry Seinfeld or Andrea Martin or Sarah Jessica Parker. I could list them all day. It's been wonderful.
And it's been presented by Mike Birbiglia from the podcast Working It Out. So please do come and please say hi if you do, because one of my favorite things is people coming up to me going, oh, I heard you on the podcast.
And
it happened after the first time, like more than a dozen times, people would come up afterwards and go, oh my God, I heard you on the podcast. And like, I had some great conversations with people who were listeners. So thank you so much.
We just got a Working It Out podcast t-shirt that just came in.
What?
I gotta get you one.
Want one. I'm serious.
Yeah.
Working it out, cause it's not done. We're working it out, cause there's no...
That's gonna do it for another episode of Working It Out. That's Alex Edelman. You can follow Alex on Twitter or Instagram at Alex Edelman. Our producers of Working It Out are myself, along with Peter Salamone and Joseph Birbiglia, consulting producer Seth Barish, sound mix by Kate Belinsky, as well as Ben Cruz, associate producer Mabel Lewis. Special thanks to my consigliere Mike Berkowitz, as well as Marissa Hurwitz and Josh Upfall. Special thanks to Jack Antonoff and Bleachers for their music. They are on a major tour right now that includes Europe. They're going to be in London the same week I'm in London, so I'm going to be at that show. As always, a very special thanks to my wife, the poet Jay Hope Stein. Our book, the new one, is in your local bookstore. We were just named finalists for the Thurber Prize for American Humor in Columbus, Ohio. It was such an honor. James McBride won the honor. It was such a cool event. Alexandra Petrie was there, who was the other finalist. It was just such an epic experience. As always, a special thanks to my daughter, Una, who created a radio fort made of pillows. Another thanks to Gary Simons, who helped us film the show, which is going to be in clips on YouTube and Instagram, so follow us on there. Thanks most of all to you who are listening to our show. That is a great labor of love. Please tell your friends, mention it to your enemies in passing, see how it goes. If they're receptive, bring it up the next time. We're working it out. We'll see you next time.